Do you know what will happen to your money if you pass away? Well, that's what we're going to talk about in episode 82 of the Atlas Annuity Podcast. Hi, everyone. This is Marty Becker, owner and founder of Atlas Financial Strategies in St. Louis, Missouri, where we specialize in safe money retirement planning. In today's episode, we're going to talk about the importance of having a beneficiary named for all of your financial accounts. Now, for every account that you have out there, you should have either an individual or a trust named as a beneficiary. The vast majority of people in this country probably would not be able to track down their beneficiary form if they really needed it. So what I want to encourage everyone to do who listens to this podcast is to check every account that you have and then even go beyond that and get a physical copy of your beneficiary form. Now, you can do this by contacting. The most direct way to do it would be by contacting the institution that holds the account, because they can check to see, number one, if you have a beneficiary listed, and number two, actually send you a physical copy of it, whether email attachment or a physical form through the mail. So the accounts that you're going to want to check to make sure you have someone named are things like your IRAs and your Roth IRAs, 401ks or 403s or 457s through your employers or ex-employers, bank accounts and CDs, non-qualified brokerage accounts through places like Fidelity or Schwab, annuities, life insurance policies, especially defined benefit pension plans, and then things like car titles or property deeds. You want to make sure that you have a TOD or a transfer on death listed on those titles. Like if you look at my car titles, you will see my name, my wife's name, and then TOD to another person. That way, there is no question of who that property or that money is supposed to go to, because you do not want to count on just naming someone in a will, maybe a trust, but if the money doesn't get to the trust, it doesn't matter. So the beneficiary form will trump everything else. So we're going to look at some real life case studies here and kind of show you what happened in these cases, and they did not turn out well for the people who believed were entitled to the money, or even that the deceased believed the money was supposed to go to. So we're going to look at three different court cases here. The first one is Herring versus Campbell, which goes all the way back to August of 2012, where some stepchildren were disinherited because the beneficiary form was not updated. So here are the facts of the case. So John Hunter worked for Marathon Oil Company and participated in their qualified retirement plan. The plan allowed him to name a primary and a secondary, also known as a contingent, beneficiary. He named his wife Joyce as primary beneficiary, but he did not name a contingent beneficiary. Kind of a big mistake. After Joyce died in 2004, he did not update his plan beneficiary. John later died in 2005. So because he died without a living primary or contingent beneficiary, his plan defaulted to one of the five beneficiaries in the following order. Number one, surviving spouse. Number two, surviving children. Number three, surviving parents. Number four, brothers and sisters. And then number five, finally, his estate. Now, because his wife was already deceased, the plan's next default beneficiary was his surviving children. But John did not have any biological or legally adopted children, but he did have two stepsons, Stephen and Michael Herring. The employer plan administrator, Eileen Campbell, she was the one who was being sued, looked into whether his two stepsons should inherit the funds, which totaled more than $300,000. However, she decided that his stepsons were not his children because they were not his biological children and he never adopted them. Okay, so a little bit of a technical error here in a technical gray area. But under the terms of the plan, because Hunter's wife had predeceased him, he had no biological or legally adopted children, and he had no surviving parents, so the plan distributed the funds to the next category of default beneficiaries, which were his six brothers and sisters. Now, the stepsons later challenged the distribution, arguing that they were Hunter's children and should have gotten the money. They cited the fact that he referred to them as his beloved sons in his will. Now, what did I just say about the will? It's a piece of paper. Okay, that's about all it's good for. So we want to make sure that you have specific people or a specific trust listed as a beneficiary. Now, the original decision from the lower court was that the plan administrator was wrong by giving the money to the siblings. So the first court, a district court, ruled in favor of the stepsons and concluded that the plan administrator abused her discretion by failing to consider the stepsons. By claims of adoption, the plan administrator then appealed the district court's ruling. That's the fun thing about the legal system. You get a ruling that is in your favor, but guess what? It always was against someone else's favor. So we have these great things called appeals. The appeal court reverses the lower court decision and the stepchildren are disinherited. So the Court of Appeals reversed the lower court's ruling and agreed that stepchildren are not children who were entitled to the retirement plan assets. This is a big one. People have these accounts. Maybe you've had them for 10, 20, 25, 30 years, and you did list a beneficiary. Is that beneficiary still around? Are they alive even? Or if they were a spouse, are you still married to them? Parents, brothers, sisters, maybe a trust that was dissolved. You need to check up on these things, okay? So the next case we're going to look at here is Kinder Morgan, Inc. versus Joanne Kraut. So Danny Lee Kraut was an employee of Kinder Morgan and participated in the savings plan, a government plan that's governed by ERISA, okay? Mr. Kraut died in 2016, leaving a surviving spouse, Joanne Kraut, and three children. As required by ERISA, the Kinder Morgan plan provided that a married participant may not name a non-spouse plan beneficiary unless the spouse consents in writing to that designation. So right there, that's a big thing because there are a lot of states out there. I know Texas, Washington, I think like Wisconsin and a handful of others. If your primary beneficiary is not your spouse, okay, if you're married and you do not list your spouse as the primary beneficiary, your spouse has to sign off that she or he is not being listed as the beneficiary. Okay. So that's kind of an uncomfortable conversation if you're trying to, you know, sidestep someone. So the plan also specified in the absence of a beneficiary designation, the participant's benefit would be paid under the following order and priority, just like the previous case: surviving spouse, surviving children, surviving parents. And in this particular plan, it doesn't list any siblings in order, but then it goes to the participant's estate. And that's a nightmare by itself. You don't want that. But after Mr. Kraut's death, the three Kraut children and Mrs. Kraut each made claims to his benefit. The children argued that Mr. Kraut had designated them as beneficiaries. They further contended that the Kraut marriage was invalid and that Mr. Kraut had designated them as beneficiaries in a prior retirement plan, which had merged into the Kinder Morgan plan. Now, I don't know if this was like a second marriage, but these three kids, I mean, if that was their mom, they were trying to screw over there, that's a dysfunctional relationship at best. And then finally, the three kids, claim that the beneficiary issue should be decided by a state probate court. Big mistake, not by the federal court. Mrs. Kraut argued that Mr. Kraut had made no beneficiary designation and therefore she was entitled to the funds. Here was the court ruling. The Fifth Circuit ruled that Mr. Kraut's benefit should be paid to Mrs. Kraut because he had not designated a plan beneficiary. The court found the Kraut children had not offered any evidence that the prior retirement plan in which Mr. Kraut named his children as beneficiaries had merged into the Kinder Morgan plan. They also failed to produce any evidence that the Kraut marriage was invalid. So this is an extremely dysfunctional case here. Totally could have been avoided if the beneficiary form had been filled out. Okay, and then the final case we're going to look at here is Elroy Earl Morris, sounds like a Southerner, versus Commissioner. Okay, and this was from April 2015. So in a recent tax court case, a taxpayer failed to properly report distributions taken from his father's IRA that were in accordance with what he believed were his father's wishes given to his siblings. So here are the facts of the case. Elroy Morris was the sole beneficiary of his father's IRA. In 2011, his father died and Morris elected to take a lump sum distribution from the IRA. The IRA custodian issued a 2011 Form 1099-R. So anytime you take a withdrawal from a tax-deferred account, you're going to get one of those. And that showed a little bit over a $95,000 distribution coded as a death distribution. So Morris served as a personal representative of his father's estate. Implementing what he believed to be his father's wishes, he issued checks in July of 2011 to two of his siblings in the aggregate amount of $37,000. These funds came from the IRA distribution that he took in his name. Morris secured assistance from a local law firm in settling his father's estate. Now, I feel kind of bad for this guy because he was trying to do the right thing and split the money up with his siblings, even though he had no legal obligation to do that, because he was the sole listed beneficiary. A paralegal did most of the work for Morris with regard to his father's estate. At one point, the paralegal told Morris that there would be no tax due on the IRA distribution. Wrong. We talked about this in the last episode. The IRS is going to get their money, whether they get it from the person who started the account or the person who inherited the account. If there have been no taxes paid on that money, it's going to get paid at some point. Evidently, she meant that there would be no federal estate tax or state inheritance tax due. But Morris understood her to mean that no tax of any kind would be due. Wrong. A little naive on his part. But, you know, if you're getting that information from kind of an authority figure, like a paralegal or an attorney, I can see the misinterpretation, but when Morris filed his federal income tax return for 2011, he did not report the IRA distribution as income. The IRS sent him a notice of deficiency determining that the IRA distributions constituted taxable income. Morris brought the case to the tax court, which is pretty much going to be a loser anytime you go up against the IRS. Just a heads up, very far in view between somebody wins a case against them. Here's the court's decision. Morris argued that it would be inequitable to hold him solely liable for the income tax on the IRA distributions because he voluntarily shared the proceeds with his siblings from whom he is unlikely to recover anything. Now, that kind of sucks. That's kind of a screw you, brother type of situation. They should have ponied up and paid their share of the taxes, especially, like I mentioned, he had no legal obligation to give them anything. He further contended that he was disadvantaged by what he believes was erroneous advice from the law firm that assisted him in settling his father's estate. The court rejected both arguments. While the court admitted Morris acted honorably, let's see what he got for doing that, unfortunately, that was not enough for him to avoid being held responsible for the taxation of the IRA distribution. So this guy did the right thing, which good for him, but then his siblings screwed him over and didn't pay their share of the taxes. Now, there are several lessons to be learned from his unhappy outcome. One, review IRA beneficiary designation forms, which is why I'm making this podcast. This is what we're talking about. This whole court case could have been avoided if the IRA owner, okay, Morris's dad, had reviewed the beneficiary forms and updated all three of his children to be equal primary beneficiaries. Number two, consider a disclaimer. If you ever find yourself in this situation where you have a parent who left all the money to one of the kids and there's multiple siblings, if you are that person who inherits the IRA and you want to do the right thing, which I would highly encourage, I would do the same thing for my brother and sister, and I would hope they would do it for me. But if you are the only person named in that beneficiary form, consider a disclaimer. Morris could have executed a qualified disclaimer on the portion of the IRA he did not want. So basically that means he's saying, I don't want this money. I'm not accepting it. I'm not taking possession of it. Okay, he would have filled out a disclaimer, and then it could have got worked out to where his siblings would have been named for the remainder of the money. So there's no way to know for sure, but it's possible that by disclaiming, Morris would have been able to have his father's IRA flow to his father's estate, and then ultimately to his siblings, Could have saved everybody a lot of grief. And then be careful with legal advice, okay? Morris claimed to be receiving advice primarily from a paralegal at a law firm handling his father's estate. His communications with her were less than completely clear, and he misunderstood the tax consequences of the IRA distribution. And remember, many attorneys, even estate planning attorneys, are unaware of the special rules and tax provisions that apply to IRAs and other retirement accounts. This is something that you would most certainly want to get some sort of IRA expert involved with, or a CPA. Okay, when it comes to taxes, and after attending this Ed Slott IRA seminar, it made me realize there are a lot of nuances in these distribution rules, especially depending on what type of account the money's being held in, meaning an IRA or a Roth or a 403 or a 401. They all have very nuanced rules about them. The overarching theories and laws behind them are pretty much the same, but each one has a little bit of a nuance to it, okay? So you want to be super, super careful when leaving money behind, or if you are the beneficiary inheriting money that has been left behind. Okay, so again, what is the point of me making this episode? It's mainly to, again, get your head in the game here. Okay, I'm sure you have accounts that you name beneficiaries for, but it's been decades since those beneficiary forms have been viewed. Go back, check all your employer retirement accounts, check your IRAs, check your brokerage accounts, check your bank accounts. Annuities, the great thing about them is you have to fill out a beneficiary form during the application process. Now, if you have annuities or you're a client of mine, we did name a beneficiary. There is no doubt about it. We had to. If you're wondering who it was, if maybe you forgot, the easiest way to do that is to log into your client portal, and you should be able to find who's listed as your beneficiary. You can bypass a step by contacting me. I'm happy to help anybody who calls. You could bypass that step because obviously it's going to take me a little bit to get back to you, get that information, get the form. Call a customer service number. It's no different. Same with your brokerage account, your bank, so on and so on. If you have titles to property, make sure a TOD is listed, a transfer of death, okay? But with the annuities, life insurance, things like that, we have to name a beneficiary at the application process. That is one of the great things about them. And all those things, they will bypass a will, they will bypass a trust, they will bypass probate, which you most certainly want to avoid at all costs. Very, very close individual to me went through probate because beneficiaries were not named. Then you have people making claims against the estate, and you're talking tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, in attorney fees to get it all sorted out. Name a beneficiary. Name a contingent beneficiary. And then make sure you have physical copies in your worst case scenario folder. Okay. I keep an envelope in my desk drawer for my wife labeled just in case, meaning just in case Marty gets hit by a bus. This is where you need to go. And these are the people you need to call. Okay. So guys, was this annuity specific? Yes and no. Again, this podcast is meant to be an overarching financial education podcast that is focused around safe money financial products, which my wheelhouse is annuities. Now, if you're new to annuities and you have questions about them, I would say the best thing you can do right out of the gate is to go and watch my video series, 20% More Spendable Income in Retirement. That will give you a pretty good understanding of what these things are and how they work. And then if you have questions about your specific situation, go to atlasannuity.com and book a short Zoom call with me so we can get your questions answered. And again, if you're finding this information helpful, do us a favor because it helps us get more exposure in these weird algorithms. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, give us a thumbs up or a like, and then share the information with someone that you think could benefit from hearing it. And as always, I want to thank you for joining me. This has been episode 82. Again, my name is Marty Becker. Wishing you all the best in your financial education. We'll catch you in the next episode.